Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Kate, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect workshop, Managing Eye and Vision Changes Related to Cancer Treatments, a Guide for People Living with Cancer. This is the first time that we've offered this very important topic, and we're really delighted with your response to this topic today. And we have on the call today over 572 participants on the call today, and you come from all over the United States. And we have international participants from Australia, Canada, Ireland, Mexico, the Netherlands, Thailand, the United Kingdom, and Venezuela. So you really come from all over the world. And it's a credit to each of you that you've chosen to spend the next hour with us. Today's program was made possible by a grant from the Elaine Roos Memorial Trust. And we really want to thank them for supporting this really important program today. Now, I'd like to turn your attention for a moment to the materials that you received from Cancer Care. And those materials is information about our speakers and all of our collaborating organizations as resources for all of you to take advantage of. And there also is information about the topics that will be covered. And there also is an evaluation form, and I would ask you to take a moment at the end of today's program and complete that evaluation form. Indeed, you are the best people to tell us the topics that we should be offering. You actually are living with cancer and have a sense of some of the issues that you'd like to have more information about. Indeed, this topic is one that many of you have requested, and we have been finally able to offer it. So we take your recommendations very seriously, and we will try to implement them as quickly as possible. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Lydia Shapira. And Dr. Shapira is Associate Professor of Medicine, Harvard Medical School, Staff Oncologist, Gillette Center for Breast Cancer, Massachusetts General Hospital. And Dr. Shapira is going to address an overview of eye and vision changes related to cancer treatments, causes and risk factors, and discussion of common eye and vision changes. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Shapira.
Well, thank you very much for the introduction and for the opportunity to talk with all of you. I am a medical oncologist. My area of specialty is breast cancer, so I often hear about problems, and as I try to be attentive and to listen to patients, they often tell me a lot of things that are wrong, and sometimes I find that I don't have the expertise to help them. So this afternoon gives me the opportunity to learn from my ophthalmology colleagues, and I hope to be able tomorrow to even apply some of the things that I might learn. So let me tell you what I frequently hear from my patients, the kinds of things that they struggle with, and I hope that what I say resonates with all of you who are living with cancer or are accompanying somebody who lives with cancer. One of the most distressing and very frequent problems is that of tearing. Either too many tears or too few tears. Many of my patients who are receiving chemotherapy tell me that their eyes are constantly tearing. Many think that they have an allergy, that they've developed an allergy. They tried different kinds of treatments for allergies, and that doesn't help them. And I sometimes tell them that I certainly don't know how to make that better, but that I know that it's a very frequent concern. So that probably would be one of my questions to my ophthalmology colleagues. What kind of advice should we give our patients who have runny eyes? Another problem is that the tear ducts are often affected. One drug that I use frequently to treat breast cancer is called docetaxel or taxotere, and that is notorious for causing problems with tear ducts, and I often find myself referring patients to an ophthalmologist in a hurry when there are problems with tearing. And then there are problems of dry eyes. Many of my patients, for instance, who are taking aromatase inhibitors or other endocrine or hormonal treatments for breast cancer often have dry eyes, and that can be very unpleasant as well. So often we refer also for eye exams and look for products that perhaps can alleviate that very, very troubling symptom. Another problem is blurred vision. sometimes the medical oncologist is unsure if it's the treatment, perhaps some of the medications that are being used, or if there's something else wrong. And I would love to hear from my ophthalmology colleagues how to think about this. You know, what kind of practical questions perhaps we can ask, or what kind of wisdom you can share with all of us that would help us understand what can be perhaps a common side effect of treatment or what would require an in-depth evaluation by an expert. Another problem is that of cataracts. Some of the treatments that we give increase the likelihood that a person will develop cataracts. And in some cases, some patients who have cancer already know they have cataracts or have early cataracts, and we wonder if the treatment will accelerate the formation of cataracts. So that's another area that I would love to have some guidance from my colleagues about, and that is how often should patients who take certain medications known to increase the frequency of cataracts be monitored? And then, if they require cataract surgery, what kind of preparation do they need? I'm dealing right now with some patients who, for instance, who have advanced cancer who are on some form of chemotherapy forever and are doing quite well and are bothered by their cataracts because that, in fact, limits their vision and their ability to drive and remain independent, and they want to have surgery. And I think that's perfectly fine, and I often wonder how long we should interrupt chemotherapy and what kind of a recovery period to expect. So it would be great if our colleagues can comment on that as well. And then finally, one of the common concerns is the risk for any kind of infection for patients who are getting some form of chemotherapy or targeted therapies that affect their immune system. So my patients often worry about things like conjunctivitis or other infectious complications that could affect the eye. So I think I'd like to turn it over to those who are real experts, and basically my questions are how to deal with runny eyes, dry eyes, how to think about blurred vision, what to do about follow-up of cataracts or surgery for cataracts, and then finally, what kinds of products could the medical oncologist recommend to a patient to perhaps help him or her to deal with some of these very common and frequent problems. Thanks very much, Carolyn, for giving me the opportunity. Now I'd love to learn from my colleagues.
Oh, thank you very much, Dr. Shapiro. This is wonderful. Thank you for identifying these issues. And now our next speaker is Dr. Stella Kim. Dr. Kim is Associate Professor of Ophthalmology, Adjunct Associate Professor of Radiation Oncology, Director of Clinical Research in Ophthalmology at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. And Dr. Kim is indeed going to address tips to manage dry eyes and loss of eyelashes, and now eyes, runny eyes that are always kind of wet and runny, recognizing changes in vision and field of vision, floaters and flashing lights, what to do, and how eye products can help you cope with eye and vision changes. Dr. Kim?
Thank you for allowing me to participate in this great conference. We at MD Anderson in Ophthalmology care for cancer patients with this variety of ocular problems as a result of their treatment, as well as eye cancer patients. Today we are focusing on cancer patients who are having eye problems due to their therapy. This therapy can obviously involve chemotherapy, radiation, especially to the head and neck area that involves the eye area, as well as allogeneic and autologous stem cell transplantation and targeted therapy as well. The very common problems that cancer patients can experience is teary eyes or runny eyes, as Dr. Shapiro mentioned, as well as dry eyes. Actually, any type of eye symptoms can be a manifestation of patients having dry eyes, which is incredibly common in patients who are undergoing treatment. Because the lacrimal gland that produces the tears for patients can be affected in a very common fashion, patient may experience dry eyes, but paradoxically experience symptoms of too much tears because the eyes are trying to wet themselves, if you will, to try to mitigate the bottom line problem of dry eyes. So in general, patients will be helps greatly if they are able to use any over-the-counter eye products that do not have preservative types of artificial tears that you can buy without prescription. And even if one has too much tears, that is something that can actually help patients. As Dr. Shapiro mentioned, patients such as breast cancer patients who may be on medications that decreases the size of the outflow from the eye surface where the tears cannot clear and therefore have teary eyes. That's a different problem that is mostly seen with a medication called Taxotere. It's dose-dependent. And for that medication problem, patients may actually require observation if it's not too bothersome, but obviously we can't have patients appearing as though they're crying all the time. So if it is affecting their quality of life and activities of daily living, that problem of punctal, what we call punctal stenosis, can certainly be addressed with even surgery. Getting to the issues of cataract, any amount of steroid use during chemotherapy and any amount of radiation to the eye area, including whole brain radiation and head and neck surgery radiation, can have patients develop cataracts. And this can be monitored and can be successfully addressed with surgery if it starts to affect patients with their activities of daily living, such as driving or reading. For patients who are pediatric patients, the monitoring should be done more frequently, as developing eyes can develop what we call quote-unquote lazy eyes or amblyopia due to cataracts. So these patients actually require more frequent evaluations. And when I say frequent, it can be due every 6 months. It really depends on the patient's treatment regimen. The dry eyes can actually cause a significant amount of ocular visual problems, and this can be not only used mitigated with artificial tears use, but there are a variety of things that can be used for patients under the guidance of an ophthalmologist, whether it is to use punctal occlusion, topical medications, even topical devices for the eye that can help patients have improved quality of life. I was asked to comment on what to do about flashing lights and floaters and visual field problems. There are many problems. Patients can develop visual field problems, especially if patients have brain cancer issues. But when ophthalmologists hear symptoms of flashing lights or floaters, that can be a problem of the retina that requires urgent evaluation and a dilated examination to make sure that there is no evidence of retinal detachment. So an urgent evaluation for those symptoms are necessary. With regard to eye and visual rehabilitation for cancer patients in general, dry eyes is very common, but because symptoms are very nonspecific regarding even the serious infection can have symptoms that are similar to dry eyes, it is important for patients to have a routine ophthalmology evaluation and to have an ophthalmologist who are aware of the oncological issues of various cancer treatment. The issues of visual field defect. Patients who have significant visual field defect as a result of brain cancers oftentimes will have significant challenges in navigating their environment, and therefore occupational or physical therapy can help them immensely. And there are medications that can certainly cause visual field defect, and more rare cancer-related specific problems that can cause visual field defect that requires urgent intervention. I think those are sort of the topics that I was charged to comment on, and I will stop here and see if we can move forward with the conference, and I'm happy to answer any questions for you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kim. Very informative, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Gumbos. Dr. Gumbos is Associate Professor and Section Chief, Section of Ophthalmology, Department of Head and Neck Surgery, Division of Surgery, the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. And Dr. Gumbos is going to address the role of the multidisciplinary team clinical trials, how research contributes to your eye vision care, and communicating with your healthcare team. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Gumbos.
Thank you so much, and I'd like to reiterate what my predecessors have said, what a pleasure it is to take part in this teleconference, and really what an important topic really is, perhaps not one that someone initially thinks of when they're diagnosed with cancer, but eye and vision health play such a critical role in people's quality of life. I think the first thing I wanted to focus on is you must think of your eye care provider as a member of the group of physicians that are providing care for your oncologic health and your eye care health. So they are one critical component that provide the eye component to all your other cancer care. And therefore, communication between these individuals and the patient is really very important. Sometimes people get challenged in distinguishing the different types of people who can provide eye care. People will hear the word optician, they'll hear optometrist, they'll hear ophthalmologist. Ophthalmologists are medical doctors with a background training in medicine, and they are probably best qualified to address the myriad of potential ophthalmic issues that a cancer patient may develop. Remember, when you go see an eye care practitioner, they need to distinguish if the symptoms that you're having may be related to the cancer itself, may be related to the treatment of the cancer, or it may be entirely unrelated to any of those factors. And it's critical that the eye care practitioner that you see have an understanding of the entire care, entire treatment that you're getting. So as you provide communication, I think one of the key things that can empower a patient is to make sure that when they see their eye care practitioner, that they can provide that individual with an update of the patient's cancer status. So some critical things that you always want to share with your eye care provider is the type of cancer you had, preferably the stage of cancer that you had, if you know that. And then you may not have all the details, but some sense of what treatments you previously had and what treatments you're currently getting. The things that we as ophthalmologists will want to know specifically are the specific drugs that the oncologists are giving you, because we're on the lookout for certain drugs causing certain particular problems. We'll also want to know if radiation was given. As Dr. Kim has pointed out, radiation can be a high risk factor for cataract formation. So when was radiation given? And then the current status of your cancer, whether you've been in remission for quite some time or whether you've recently just been diagnosed. All these things are critical aspects that help us formulate an understanding of why you may be having ophthalmic or ocular issues. Now, I've been asked to comment a little bit about clinical trials. Clinical trials are the framework with which we move the field forward. It's the framework with which we can assess whether a new treatment, drug, or modality is effective, and it's really the standard with which new treatments are accepted within the field. And just like every other aspect, some of these new treatments have the risk of affecting vision. We don't always know the potential toxicities or the potential side effects of a new drug when it comes out on the market, how much it may or may not affect vision. So here again, if you're on a new drug, it's important to ask your oncologist, have there been any known toxicities associated with this as it relates to the eye? And I suspect if there has been any concern, your oncologist will already arrange eye exams to monitor your eye and to be on the lookout for any particular problems that may occur. And the key here is, again, the communication between the ophthalmologist as part of your care and the oncologist and the rest of the team. And sometimes that can be simply done through telephone conferencing with the physician. Sometimes if the patient can bring with them recent medical records, that's incredibly helpful so that we as practitioners can provide, you know, good communication. And one thing that a patient may want to consider when they see their oncologist and they're having eye care problems is there a particular ophthalmologist or group of ophthalmologists you routinely work with who are attuned and aware of the potential problems that an oncology patient is likely to assess and is likely to encounter and may be aware of the particular issues that come up? So I think the critical take-home point that I hope everyone that's listening takes is you can empower your care by helping and improving the communication between the oncologist and the ophthalmologist. And just a little bit of information can go a long way in diagnosing and focusing on the care that you need. So I'll stop there at this point.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Gumbo. It's very, very interesting and very important information for everyone to have, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A as well. Thank you. And our next speaker is Sarah Kelly. Ms. Kelly is an oncology social worker at Cancer Care, and she's going to address the free psychosocial support services offered by Cancer Care and the role of support groups. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Ms. Kelly.
Thank you, Carolyn. I also want to thank everyone on the call. I think we've got a lot of really great information today. So as Carolyn said, I'm an oncology social worker here, and I work with many people who are coping with eye and vision changes due to treatment, and also their loved ones. And I really want to begin by speaking about the importance of creating a support network when you're diagnosed with cancer and how Cancer Care can be a part of that network. I think there are many ways we can help. Just a little information on who we are. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization that provides free professional support services to anyone affected by cancer. Cancer Care programs include individual counseling, which we provide face-to-face in the New York area and over the phone nationally. We provide support groups, which are also face-to-face in New York and over the telephone nationally and also online. We provide education about resources, how to navigate the healthcare system, practical help, and also some limited financial assistance as well as chemotherapy copay assistance. All our services are provided by licensed master's level oncology social workers and are completely free of charge. Oncology social workers really are trained in how a diagnosis of cancer affects a person and his or her family and friends. They're also trained to help cancer patients and their families tackle the problems that accompany the disease, such as financial demands, physical changes, like we were talking about today, social adjustment, and psychological impact in care. Adjusting to and dealing with a diagnosis is an important part of the healing process. As you know, cancer affects the whole person and the entire support network. Asking for help by joining a support group or by contacting a social worker for counseling is a sign of strength, and I really can't stress that enough. You don't have to walk the path alone. Joining a support group, you can connect with others who are going through a similar situation or having similar problems. With individual counseling, you really have a space that's just yours to voice any concerns. These connections help lessen the isolation that many people with cancer experience. I think feeling well emotionally really helps you better deal with the diagnosis and the treatment. If you're interested in any of Cancer Care services, you can call our HOPE line at 1-800-813-HOPE, and that's 1-800-813-4673. Or you can visit our website, which is www.cancercare.org. And our website's very comprehensive. You know, you'll find a lot of additional information on your diagnosis and treatment and also some of the other concerns I've discussed here. You know, we learned a lot from today's program. There's a lot of information to digest and get your arms around. We're also here to help you understand what it means for you and your family. You know, a social worker can help you prioritize, and if you need to rehearse questions or learn questions that may help you within your diagnosis, talking to the medical team, we're here to help you do that too. Really, I just want you to remember you're not alone in this. We're here to help you. Thank you for your attention and the opportunity to talk to you today.
Oh, thank you very much, Sarah. That's a really excellent presentation. Thank you, and also very informative about the service of Cancer Care as well, so thanks. And now we have time for questions. We actually have a lot of time for questions, and that's a credit to all of our speakers for actually allowing that to have, we have this time. And so I'm going to ask Kate to explain to the audience how to queue up for questions, and we're going to try to take as many of your questions as possible. Now, if for some reason we do not get to your question, I'm going to encourage you all to call our call center, our HOPE line at 1-800-813-HOPE, and I'll repeat that number at the end of the call. But let's see if we can't take more of your questions right now. Kate, could you explain to everybody how to queue up for questions, and we'll let the questions begin.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question. And I'm showing our first question comes from the line of Emil S. Your line is open.
Hi. You mentioned about over-the-counter eye tears like Visine or Murine. Do you prefer those or prescriptive eye tears?
Well, thank you. That's an excellent question. Excellent. Thank you. Dr. Kim, would you like to address that question?
Sure. So over-the-counter artificial tears, it really doesn't matter which brand one chooses, is that they are preservative-free. That's most important. Because the preservatives in the eye drops can actually start to build up on your eye surface with frequent use, it is just more gentle for you to use any brand that does not have preservatives. Visine and Murine, those type of drops are oftentimes they do make drops for dry eyes, but you have to be careful because there are medications that quote-unquote take the red out, and that is something you want to actually avoid because while the eyes may look white and pretty afterwards, the rebound redness when it comes back is actually worse, and the dryness can actually be worse after the use of those medications or over-the-counter medications. They're not just artificial tears. Prescriptives are not necessary, but artificial tears during the day and artificial tears ointment at nighttime can be certainly helpful. I hope that answers your question.
Excellent. Thank you. And our next question?
Our next question comes from the line of Marcia R. Your line is open.
Yes, I'm assuming the answer is probably no, but you mentioned with chemotherapy. I have not had chemotherapy, but I have received radiation treatments for both breast cancer and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Would there be any likely risk to my eyesight having said that I didn't have chemo and just radiation for breast cancer and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, so nothing with head and neck?
And your question, Marcia, would be?
Is there likely to be any problem with vision because of those treatments, or would it have to be more specifically just to the head or neck or eye to have these problems?
So I'm going to ask.
That.
Okay, excellent, Dr. Yes, Dr. Kim.
So if you had much steroids treatment during your non-Hodgkin's lymphoma treatment, then that can affect your vision in the sense that it can cause cataracts. If your radiation treatment was just to your breast for your breast cancer and not involving anywhere above the neck, then radiation itself would not cause any eye problems. But if for your non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, you mentioned that you did get treated, and that probably involves some level of steroids involved. So that's where I would think that it could affect your vision.
And Dr. Shapira, could you also just comment on these medications that actually might be worth then having a discussion back with the oncologist or with their ophthalmologist about what they're actually taking, so having actually a list of the medications that they're on?
I think as a general principle, it really helps if you are very organized and have an updated list of medications every time you see a healthcare professional, especially a physician or a nurse practitioner, because then they may be able to spot potential problems or interactions. So I think running your medication list by both your medical oncology team as well as your special ophthalmology team, if you have one, or your personal ophthalmologist is a good idea for everybody, really.
Okay, thank you. And we have a question from one of our online participants. Can you discuss whether there are lingering vision changes from chemotherapy after chemotherapy is completed, and if so, how long might those problems continue? I'm going to ask maybe Dr. Shapira and Dr. Kim and Dr. Gumbos if you could all comment on that, because it's like talking about sort of long-term effects of chemo.
Yeah, I would probably turn it over to my colleagues. I think that it's already been stated that steroids can have lasting effects. Most of the other drugs, at least in my experience, affect the eye only as long as you're taking the medication. That said, there are many patients with cancer who take cancer treatments for many, many years. For instance, patients taking hormonal treatments for breast cancer may be on these medications for 5 or 10 years, and many patients often need to take steroids also, either continuously or intermittently for very long periods of time. So while the chemotherapy drugs, typically the injury is only impacting function while one is on that particular drug. But I'll turn it over to the expert.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Kim and Dr. Gombos, do you want to comment? Or?
Well, one thing I'd like to add is that remember that in addition to being a cancer patient, there are other things that can cause eye problems, and sometimes the fact that you've had a drug or radiation that can cause issues is cumulative on top of other medical problems you may have, like diabetes or hypertension. So it may be true that the treatment you had was a while ago, but we certainly can sometimes see worsening effects of underlying disorders, particularly like diabetes, can be more challenging in patients who have had a history of radiation to the eye and to the head and neck region, and have other underlying problems as well. So it may not just be the fact that you were treated 10 years ago, but it needs to be looked at collectively at the rest of your general health as well.
I'd like to echo Dr. Gombos' comment regarding getting a routine eye examination and dovetail Dr. Shapiro's comment about the long-term treatment for some of our patients. We know that certain agents do have specific ocular side effects for which patients need routine care. But in addition to that, even when patients are done with treatment, lacrimal gland function may not completely recover, so patients may continue to have to negotiate their symptoms of dry eyes. They may have to continue to negotiate their symptoms from cataracts until it gets worse enough for surgical intervention. In addition, some of the medications that are newer targeted therapy, we know that while these side effects are incredibly rare, but they are new and they have to be monitored for patients who are on oftentimes early phase protocols. They protocol treatments, oftentimes the side effects are not even known, so it is important to have monitoring, self-monitoring for patients and to communicate that with their oncologist so that they may be referred to an ophthalmologist for prompt evaluation.
Excellent. Thank you. I hope this is helpful, and thank you so much. These are excellent. Our next question?
Our next question comes from the line of Jackie Kay. Your line is open.
Thank you. I think the prior caller asked a very similar. I was just concerned about long-term effects 3 and 4 years out of chemo because I'm having serious eye problems, and I had no other chronic diseases. And so unless they have something to add, that was my question also, the long-term effects of chemo.
Would you be kind enough just to briefly identify your eye problems, just briefly, so that might be able to comment as well? Just
certainly the dryness, incredible photosensitivity. I can barely go outdoors without even shade. Sunglasses don't help very much. Dryness. I've had strange floaters. I've had strange dilation in my irises for no reason. And the eye doctors just all kind of dismiss it. Cataracts progressed real quickly, and now they're stable. I think that's about it. And certainly blurred vision, serious vision changes.
And are you on any type of maintenance medication at this point?
No. No.
And would you be willing to identify the medicines you're on just so that people could have some idea of?
That I'm on or that I took chemo?
That you took, yes. Thank you. You
mitomycin. And 5-FU, I don't recall exactly, fluoro something.
Okay. Okay.
Those were the two.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you. So Dr. Gombos and Dr. Kim, would you want to comment on this? It's a general question. We're going to try to do the best we can in terms of, Jack, we may not be able to answer it totally, but at least perhaps give some guidelines that you could then take back to your healthcare team, which is actually true for everybody on the call. Hopefully that what you learn will be information to take back to your oncologist as well as your ophthalmology team.
Well, what I would say is she's already done the critical thing is she's identified two drugs that she was on that can cause a series of problems. In fact, one of them, 5-FU, can cause problems after the drug has been administered, even some would say up to a year after it was administered. So I think the critical take-home point is that she knows what drugs she was on. She clearly identifies the symptoms and the problems that she's having. And now the key is to take that to her eye care practitioner. And perhaps it's someone that doesn't deal with a lot of cancer patients. Perhaps ask them if they have a colleague who manages a lot of patients with cancer, dry eye, a number of cornea specialists focus, like Dr. Kim does, on severe dry eye, and just get into the hands of the right person who sort of interacts with these things. We actually have a whole textbook just that focuses on eye toxicities from drugs. And so it's not as if one drug causes just one type of toxicity, but it's knowing the drugs that she was on, and particularly one of those drugs is known to sort of have can develop later time effects. So that's sort of the key take-home point from a general concept. And the other thing is there's no need to suffer. There's clearly going to be experts out there who can provide help and support. And so if the symptoms are really bad, you may want to see if there's a specialist in your area who can help support your symptoms. Most major cities have ophthalmologists who have part of their practice focused on oncologic patients.
Okay. Thank you. And Dr. Kim, did you want to add anything? Or?
Sure. I just wanted to add, thank you for this question, because often this is not uncommon feedback we get from patients who are cured of their cancer and have debilitating ocular adverse events, which significantly decreases their quality of life. As Dr. Gombos mentioned, I think it is with persistence that you probably will be able to get to a subspecialist who might be able to help you dealing with some of these ocular side effects. That some of these can be very easily mitigated. Some of them take a little bit more consideration. Ophthalmology, even though we deal with one very small organ, we are of seven subspecialists. We have seven subspecialty within ophthalmology, each doing very specific thing. And if you have pupillary abnormalities that cannot be explained, if you have eye surface problems that cannot be helped with conventional treatment, if you have retinal issues and unexplained sensitivity to light, even at higher than what cataract would sort of affect you, I think you need to see a neuro-ophthalmologist, and there are other subspecialists, corneal specialists, who might be able to help you.
Okay, excellent. And Dr. Shapiro, do you want to add anything to that? Is that something?
Now you see how complex it is.
Yes.
So I think we're all learning a lot here, and the last question was clearly a wonderful opportunity for us all to understand that even within the world of ophthalmology, there are subspecialists who have different areas of expertise, and the message is not to give up. If you have a bothersome symptom that interferes with your ability to function, certainly going outside without wearing dark glasses is a very serious problem. I think the message is to try to locate an expert who can help.
And Jackie, I think I probably will want to call you after the call, too, to see if we can talk more specifically, but I think I appreciate you really giving this more detail. And I guess the other question I would have for our speakers, piggybacking on your question, is do you go back to your medical oncologist even and say, look, I'm having these symptoms. Is there something that you can you help to guide me to find an oncologist, an ophthalmologist who can help me with that? Is that something, Dr. Shapiro, that would be a good approach, or to actually?
Yeah, I've been asking myself that question, I think, throughout the past 45 minutes, and I think that a lot of this is beyond the expertise of most oncologists. I mean, you may have an oncologist who happens to have an interest or have a best friend or a spouse who's an ophthalmologist and be tuned into these issues, but the majority of oncologists really don't know that much. So I think that it's better to see if the ophthalmologist can help track a specialist who does have more expertise. If you are treated at a major cancer center, then the story is different, because typically there are groups of ophthalmologists and they will help make that connection. But in communities, I don't know that exactly how the oncologist would be able to help. I think it would have to be perhaps a team approach, or either the ophthalmologist or the oncologist try to identify a specialist in the particular area.
This is definitely
some of the things that we're pointing out really are things that, you know, Dr. Kim and I have been working in this area for well over a decade, and are fortunate to work at a very tertiary university-based institution. I think in each town there is hopefully a university-based system. Often those oncologists, especially if they're running clinical trials, will have an ophthalmologist that they often interact with, because not infrequently they will need their interaction and support. So certainly at the major cancer centers, there's usually going to be some ophthalmologist within the institution or the system that often have the opportunity to evaluate the oncologic patients. In most major cities, I don't see this being challenging. It's really in the smaller communities where I think it may be a little bit more difficult. And then you can always ask your eye care provider, well, is there someone in a major city that you can refer me to? Is there someone in a bigger city that you think may have any expertise or knowledge in this area? There's nothing wrong in asking someone, is there someone else who can help me with my very specialized needs? There's nothing inappropriate with that.
So I think we have some important points, is that many of you are in states where there are comprehensive cancer centers, and those centers may often have more of the National Cancer Institute designated cancer centers that actually may have a more comprehensive team of ophthalmologists. There also is an 800 number in all of your materials to call the National Cancer Institute's cancer hotline. It's 1-800, the number for cancer. It's in all of your materials. And their staff may be able to help to lead you to a team. But I also think that this is an area that is being developed, and so you're all pioneers with us on this. I think it sounds like some of the major centers like MD Anderson do have a whole team of eye experts, and so that would be, it's important to be aware that there are people out there who are concerned about your issues and wanting to help you and to get access to them. That's really very important. Excellent questions. Our next question?
Our next question comes from the line of Raquel S. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Raquel. I had similar questions about the length of time that one can develop symptoms, eye symptoms. I've had dry eyes ever since I had my chemo, and it seems to be getting a little bit worse, and also 4 years after I had a vitreous detachment in one of my eyes, and then recently on the other eye, and sometimes one of my eyes, and I don't forget which whether it's the one that already had the vitreous detachment or the one that's still going through it, that I will get if I look to the side, I may get a very sharp pain kind of thing, and then it settles down. And also light sensitivity. And the other part of that is what type of ointments do you use at night for the dry eyes? Because I use Tears Refresh, and I wanted to know whether that's got a preservative in it or not.
Well, thank you so much. Dr. Kim, can you address this in a general way? Thank you.
Sure. So to begin with the tear supplement ointment that one can choose to use at nighttime, there are a whole host of preservative-free types of artificial tears, whatever the brand name may be. Refresh Plus is one. Gentile Gel is another. Lacrylub is another. All of these brands, again, I always tell my patients that it is not so much what you use, but that you use something and that you use it with consistency, even if you're not having a problem. Oftentimes, with cancer patients, all the eye problems may be attributable to the cancer treatment, but in fact, many of the things that are are problematic for patients just actually happens with age, with I always say older and wiser. As we grow older and wiser, we have these problems: vitreous detachment, dry eyes, and the degree with which it impacts the patients. It's important to then not just accept that these are the only things that can be done for patients. Dr. Gambos is absolutely right in that you do not need to suffer with these. Oftentimes, patients are the ones who have to convince the care providers that this is actually one of the most important things that affect the patient's quality of life, and that once their cancer issues are a non-issue, that they really have to address this. And to be fair, ophthalmologists in general, not working with oncology or a major hospital, may not see very much of cancer-related eye problems. So it is important to get the help you need. If patients are having dry eyes, the eye surface problem, it may not be just because you don't make tears. The dry eye sort of science, if you will, as simple as it seems, it actually, the tears is made of three coats of film. So you have tear out of the liquid form, the oily form that comes with the health of your eyelid from the oil glands, and the mucus form that attaches a tear form that has to come from the health of your eye surface. So any one of the three layers that are affected, patients can suffer from dry eye. So patients can really benefit from going to a corneal or external ophthalmologist specialist, not a general ophthalmologist. If you're debilitated that much, you should be in the hands of a corneal specialist to help you. If you have diabetes and you have macular degeneration, you have retinal problems, patients who see retina ophthalmologists, they're not the ones who are going to take care of your eye surface problems or cataract problems. So again, I want to stress on how specialized ophthalmology care is, and the disconnect between the communication, even with the major oncology group and ophthalmology group. You have to be your advocate for your ocular health. And I always say, because the symptoms of a simple dry eyes, or I'd say simple not because to denigrate the, what people are feeling, because that's the mindset that many care providers may have. Oh, it's just dry eyes. You'll sort of deal with it, when in fact it impacts patients significantly. I still say that because these symptoms are similar to really damaging intraocular infections that can occur in patients, especially if they are going through their treatment, when in doubt, check it out with an ophthalmologist. That's what I always tell my patients. So I hope that helps.
And that's a wonderful message to give everybody. When in doubt, check it out with an ophthalmologist. And if you all remember that, and it may be going through a few ophthalmologists to find the right one, I guess is what we're hearing also. Our next question, Kate?
Our next question comes from the line of Carol P. Your line is open.
You had talked about steroids affecting cataracts. I take dexamethasone for 5 days before, during, and after chemo every 3 weeks. Is it likely to affect cataracts taking it part-time like that?
Well, Dr. Kim and Dr. Gumbos?
Yes, absolutely. Even a very small amount can actually impact the change in cataracts. So cataract is not really a disease, if you will. You can sort of think about it like wrinkles. So we all, anyone over the age of 55 or 60, will have some change in the lenses of their eyes, and that is what cataract is. Steroids, another type of chemotherapy, and certainly radiation to the eye area, can change that cataract earlier. Dexamethasone, even if you take it intermittently, can impact the rate with which patients change their cataract. But the reason why virtually all chemotherapy regimen patients experience quote-unquote blurred vision is because it can be due to the eye surface being dry. It can be due to the lens inside the eye, the cataract, fluctuating, if you will, due to high dose of steroids. The blood sugar content can actually impact the way you see. So transient fluctuation, as I'm sure most of you experienced when you were going through treatment, that's reasonable to experience. But again, I always say when is something that is concerning to the patient, because eye problem cannot really be visible to your oncologist unless you have a red, beefy, ugly eye. You may have a serious infection and the eye can look normal. So again, I encourage everyone to check that out. But cataract, I think Dr. Shapiro wanted to have some comments about cataract surgery. If there are other questions about that, I'm happy to comment. But cataract itself is not a bad disease. It can be managed appropriately by ophthalmologists.
And I'd like to reiterate that, you know, the issue here is you're on a drug that's causing eye side effects for a particular reason, because your oncologist has put you on it. We can address those other issues and complications that come up. I hope that no one would walk away and say, well, I'm so worried about cataract that I'm going to talk to my doctor and get me off of steroids. That should not be the message here. The message here is listen to your oncologist. There's a reason why they're putting you on these medications. And we as ophthalmologists will work with them to mitigate and then make sure that your ocular health is taken care of.
Excellent. And Dr. Shapiro, do you want to comment on that as well?
Just to reinforce the message and say that many patients will experience problems such as these and for different reasons, either because they are aging, because they may have other contributing causes to the formation of cataracts, and probably because some aspect of their cancer treatment accelerated the formation of that cataract. So having cataract surgery is a very reasonable thing, even in the context of an ongoing cancer treatment, and just requires some flexibility and coordination between the oncologist and the ophthalmologist. At least that's been my experience.
So there is a question from one of our online participants, Kathy, about the white hemoglobin and platelet counts being below the normal range and one then needing to have cataract surgery. So how would we deal with, how is that dealt with in a general way? Dr. Shapiro, could you address that? And then Dr. Kim and Dr. Gumbos.
So let's have our little role play here. We can pretend this is a real scenario. And, you know, what I would do is I would pick up the phone and call the ophthalmologist, which is what I do, and then maybe I can ask a question here and say, what kind of parameters do you need to do the surgery safely, and in general, in your experience, how long do we need to interrupt a cancer treatment for in order to allow a patient to have cataract surgery so that they can remain independent and have best possible vision?
I've been performing cataract surgery in cancer patients for the last 12 years, and it really depends on that patient's cancer care. So if the question is a patient needs cataract surgery and they anticipate being completed with their treatment in the next 4 months, 6 months, then it is obviously more reasonable to wait. However, if that given patient, for example, has to live and have livelihood to be able to see, such as a truck driver, like those type of life decision has to come into play with respect to when to approach that surgery for that given patient. We do have many patients whose white counts are never going to be normal. We have many patients who are on perpetual treatment, maintenance treatment, and there are things that we do very differently for cataract surgery for our cancer patients than what may be done at an outside institution. The big issue is infection, of course, anytime we do surgery. Another issue is actually how patients react to anesthesia. After much treatment, our anesthesia colleague will tell us that our patients do react a little bit differently to their sedation. So that is something that the ophthalmologists also have to be aware of. And in terms of sort of the type of incision and the type of lens that we put in, those are also very important in terms of achieving the quality of vision that they may have afterwards with respect to the consideration of their pre-existing ocular problems. So I would answer Dr. Shapiro, it depends. How long do you anticipate having this patient treated? And in terms of sort of the overall health, now we've taken patients who are not doing very well, but that their only wish is that they are able to improve their vision in order for them to enjoy their quality of life and their remaining quality of life, however short and long that may be. And this is, for me, particularly gratifying for us to help these patients, because then they're able to read and see their relatives, and that there is no really end point in terms of when I would consider helping our patients, regardless of their status.
So, Carolyn, I think the clear message for our patients is that everybody can be helped with a proper plan, and that may require, again, a direct communication between the oncologist and the ophthalmologist who's going to perform the surgery, so that as long as the individual is healthy enough to undergo this minor surgery and can have some form of anesthesia, then it's certainly possible to go ahead. The blood counts don't have to be perfect. They just have to be safe.
And more we would approach our patients, our standard would be to give more topical antibiotics before, during, after. We often have to administer systemic dose of antibiotics depending on where they are with their cancer treatment and how debilitated they are with their immune system. We approach the specifics of the surgery itself a little bit differently. So I would say when one is considering cataract surgery and they've had chemotherapy or they've had cancer treatment or are continuing to undergo maintenance treatment, that be communicated with an ophthalmologist who's actually used to doing cataract surgery in cancer patients. I think the approach should be a little bit different.
And Dr. Gumbos, do you want to add anything?
Well, no, I think, you know, the critical thing is that there are ophthalmologists who routinely do these sort of procedures. Patients should hear that a cataract surgery is a surgical issue that can be addressed, and we can really improve people's quality of life. And once again, be an advocate if you're concerned that your eye care practitioner doesn't interact enough with patients who have cancer. Ask them, how many patients with eye cancer have you done cataract surgery on? Do you mind if I seek out or find someone who routinely does surgery on cancer patients? Dr. Kim's years of experience really reflect, again, the subspecialty area of expertise. But in the end of the day, the take-home message is that if with proper guidance and communication between your oncologist and your ophthalmologist, you can have this procedure done safely and efficiently and rehabilitate your quality of life.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank all of our speakers. You've really been outstanding. This has been an amazing program. I want to thank all of you who have asked questions on the phone and online, and all of you who also have been listening. This is a very important program. Our hope is to do many more of these, because clearly we've begun this dialogue around these issues. They're very important. We encourage all of you to continue your discussions with your oncologists and your ophthalmologists, and that they work together to help you. I guess we're giving you the message that this is an important area for your quality of life and in general. And these what you're hearing from all of our experts on the call today is that these problems can be handled and resolved to improve your own lives and quality of life and vision, actually. So this is very important. This is an hour workshop, and that we realize in planning a program like this that you all have so many needs that an hour cannot possibly address. And so I want you to know that you certainly, we have a staff of 35 oncology social workers that are here to help you, and you can call us here at Cancer Care at 1-800-813-HOPE. Please do call us. We're here to take your questions. Those of you who perhaps think of a second or third question, do call us. Also, we don't want anyone to think that you're alone in coping with these problems, or that we don't want you to throw up your hands and think that there's no help for you. We want you to know that you're now part of a community of support. We are here to help you, and we are simply a telephone call away. And I encourage you all to call us or visit our website. And I want to thank you all for participating today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may disconnect. Have a wonderful day.